Good morning. It's so good to be with you this morning. When Alyssa and I were sitting down with the calendar to find some days that might work for preaching for me, she said, "Now, I don't know, like, if you could maybe preach on Thanksgiving. I know it's a holiday." And I was like, "Yes, I would love to preach on Thanksgiving. Thanksgiving is my thing." I've heard it said that every preacher has kind of one sermon, this kernel that will come through in whatever they do, and Thanksgiving is my one sermon, so I'm really excited to be able to be with you today and to share on this day particularly. Most of what I will say is basically what that story just said, so if you don't follow anything, but you leave thinking we can give thanks for this mess right where we are, then you've got it, you can still listen along with me. Many of us are going to come together with friends and family around a Thanksgiving meal over the next couple of days, if we haven't already. And often when we gather, we share stories. If we are joining with friends and families that we don't see frequently, our stories might be ones that fill each other in on the day-to-day elements of our current realities, how our families are doing, what work is like right now, a hobby that we're involved in, a course that we're taking, maybe a place we're volunteering. We may recount significant events that have occurred in recent months. Perhaps a child's start at a new school, a move, a job transition, maybe an update in a health situation for ourselves or a loved one. Often, as the meal goes on, our stories of catch-up turn to stories of remembrance, and we find ourselves saying, "Oh, that reminds me of," or, "Do you remember that time when?" The stories we tell weave together our past and our present and make meaning of what has been and what is and give us places of connection and common identity among those with whom we've shared significant experiences. The stories we tell, whether around the Thanksgiving table or in our day-to-day lives, have power. Power to shape our understanding of ourselves, our relationships, and our journeys. The stories we tell frame our reality. The stories we tell matter. God knew that his people, the Israelites, needed story to be reminded of who they were, and more importantly, who God is and has been to them. In Exodus 12, we find these instructions regarding Passover. Moses says to the people, "This is a day you are to commemorate for the generations to come. You shall celebrate it as a festival to the Lord, a lasting ordinance. For 7 days, you are to eat bread made without yeast. On the first day, remove the yeast from your houses, for whoever eats anything with yeast in it from the first day through the seventh must be cut off from Israel. On the first day, hold a sacred assembly, and another on the seventh day. Do not work at all on these days except to prepare food for everyone to eat. That is all you may do. Celebrate the festival of unleavened bread because it was on this very day that I brought you out of Egypt. Celebrate this day as a lasting ordinance for generations to come." And then they go on to give more instructions about not using yeast and how they're going to prepare their bread and why. And they finish by saying, "Obey these instructions as a lasting ordinance for you and your descendants. When you enter the land that the Lord will give you as he promised, observe this ceremony. And when your children ask you, 'What does this ceremony mean to you?' tell them, 'It is the Passover sacrifice to the Lord, who passed over the houses of the Israelites in Egypt and spared our homes when he struck down the Egyptians.'" Passover is essentially a liturgy of remembrance and thanksgiving. Woven into the meal itself are a series of symbolic foods representing the events of Passover leading up to the Exodus. It is a thorough and detailed recalling of God's mighty saving acts on behalf of his people Israel. The psalm we read together earlier is sung as a hymn of thanksgiving during the Passover meal, and it's I'm the one who made us say over and over, "God's love endures forever." The people of Israel, through faithful and careful observance of this annual ceremony and reading that over and over, have a deeply ingrained sense of their identity. This annually rehearsed and thus innately known story provides for them a plot in which they are key characters in relationship to the main character, a loving and powerful God who intervened in history to rescue them. This annual Passover celebration reorients the people to the most essential reality of their lives, that God, who is good, who is God of all gods, Lord of all lords, the only one who makes great wonders, all the list of the things from that psalm, that very same God rescued them from slavery and brought them to the promised land, all because of his love, a love that endures forever. It was Passover that Jesus and his disciples were celebrating at the Last Supper. Giving thanks is a central element of what the writers of the Gospels passed on to us about that final meal. As Karen read for us, when the time came, Jesus took his place at the table and the apostles joined him, and he said to them, "I have earnestly desired to eat this Passover with you before I suffer. I tell you, I won't eat it until it is fulfilled in God's kingdom." He takes the cup and he gives thanks, and he takes the bread and he gives thanks. In this passage, the Greek word for giving thanks is eucharistesis. Its root word is eucharisteo, and I just happen to have it tattooed on my finger. I was introduced to the word eucharisteo through Anne Voskamp's first book, 1,000 Gifts, and much of the rest of what I will say this morning comes directly from it. I'm a visual person, so if you want to see it, that's the transliteration. Greek letters would look different, but that's the word. So this book, 1,000 Gifts, is the recounting of, and she begins it by recounting this horrific event that happened to her family when she was a young child that has cast a long, dark shadow over her life. She shares how that event left her questioning God's goodness and how she, like most of us, wrestle with this human condition, this sense of lack, this yearning for satisfaction, fulfillment, searching for joy. And against the backdrop of her dark experience and feelings of emptiness, Anne discovers this word. And I'd like to read to you that discovery in her own words. She says this in her book. "He took bread, gave thanks, and broke it." I read it slowly. In the original language, "he gave thanks" reads eucharisteo. The root word of eucharisteo is charis, meaning grace. Jesus took the bread and saw it as grace and gave thanks. He took the bread and knew it to be gift and gave thanks. But there is more, and I read it. Eucharisteo, thanksgiving, envelops the Greek word for grace, charis, but it also holds its derivative, the Greek word chara, meaning joy. Was this the clue to the quest of all most important? Deep chara joy is found only at the table of eucharisteo, the table of thanksgiving? I sit there long wondering, is it that simple? Is the height of my chara joy dependent on the depths of my eucharisteo thanks? So then, as long as thanks is possible, then joy is always possible? Joy, always possible. Whenever, meaning now. Wherever, meaning here. Maybe in this mess. Charis, grace. Eucharisteo, thanksgiving. Chara, joy. A Greek word that might make meaning of everything. So in the book, Anne goes on to develop a list of 1,000 things she's thankful for as a discipline to develop a habit of gratitude. And she continues to kind of ponder this word and to think through it and to discover where else it is in the Bible. I'm going to read to you another little section of hers. She says, "I stand the next morning on planks of light lying down across the floor and I bake bread. Yeasty dough moist between my fingers, and that one word works me again and again. Eucharisteo. I shape loaves and think how Jesus took the bread and gave thanks, and then the miracle of the multiplying of the loaves and fishes. How Jesus took the bread and gave thanks, and then the miracle of Jesus enduring the cross for the joy set before him. How Jesus stood outside Lazarus's tomb, the tears streaming down his face, and he looked up and prayed, 'Father, I thank you that you have heard me.' And then the miracle of a dead man rising. Thanksgiving raises the dead. I lay loaves into pans and feel years of angst lying down too. Eucharisteo, thanksgiving, always precedes the miracle. The bread rises." Anne goes on to develop a list of thanksgiving, a way to develop a discipline of gratitude, even in the midst of life's mundane realities and larger trials. This list for her is a means of counting up God's grace, of remembering who God is and how God has been present. Just as the Israelites collected the details of God's saving acts and recited them annually at Passover, this list provided for her a record of God's goodness. And as she comes up with a list of 1,000 things she's thankful for, she does find it to be truly transformative and a source of great joy. But at this point, I'm going to switch from Anne's story to my own. I read this book when it first came out in January of 2011. Cultivating gratitude seemed like a good idea, so I started to keep a little list of my own. As I did so, I remember thinking, this is all well and good, but I have never really had to face any hardship. It's one thing to give thanks in all things when all the things are pretty manageable. But could I do it in the midst of difficult circumstances? The next month, in February, a dear friend died in a tragic building accident. He and his wife and 3 children had moved to Africa to be part of a ministry there. And while he was in a building project helping to build a new seminary, the saw that he was holding exploded in his hands and he died. Terrible, unexpected freak accident. A few weeks later, as his family had come back to Canada and I sat at his funeral, looking at his wife and 3 young children, I remember thinking, so what does it mean to give thanks in this? What if I was Kate right now? Could I give thanks? I continued to question, what does Eucharisteo look like? I had never had to grapple with adversity. Could I do it? Could I give thanks in hard things? I was about to find out. And while my hard thing didn't in any way compare to Kate's loss, it was my own hard loss. And so I'm going to share a little bit about that with you. I was pregnant at the time, early in my first trimester. The night of the funeral, as we drove home in the dark, after picking up Hayden, who was about 1, I had some discomfort and cramping, and I remember thinking, I wonder if something's wrong. But it didn't last, and I felt fine in the morning, and we carried on. 4 weeks later, I went for a routine ultrasound to confirm how far along I was, and I was told that our baby had no heartbeat and had stopped growing probably 4 weeks earlier, likely coinciding with the night of the funeral. My memories of that day are foggy. I remember calling James at work, but I don't even remember when he came home or what we said. I have no idea who was taking care of Hayden that day. What I do remember most are the things I wrote on my gratitude list. Number 224, Dad's strong hug. Dad was the first person I saw that day. Number 225, didn't think I was gonna get emotional. Mom coming home from a work trip to be a comforting presence. Number 226, empathetic words and permission from my work colleagues to do what I need. The things I was intentionally grateful for, the story of gratitude that I wrote down in that hard day, are the things that stand out in my memory. The stories we tell and the way we tell them matter. My miscarriage was an unusually long and strange experience, with a month passing between that ultrasound and hearing that news and the whole ordeal being over. And that month coincided with Lent, which was a strange blessing to grapple with my own experience alongside Christ's journey to the cross, all against a backdrop of this word, Eucharisteo, that I had been contemplating. And while I never would have asked for that experience, my understanding of God's presence with me, even when things felt dark, it deepened in ways I didn't think would have been possible. I learned the lesson of Eucharisteo, that God's goodness could be found in hard things, even if sometimes it felt like scrounging for crumbs in the dark. I continued to keep my list, and it sustained me through another miscarriage that year, this time coinciding with standing up at my best friend's wedding. It was still hard, and yet still, I found God as I sought to intentionally look for things to be thankful for. As Anne says in her book somewhere, God gives gifts, and I give thanks, and I unwrap the gift given, joy. By the end of that month in September, I was so convinced of the power of giving thanks as a transformative discipline that I had it tattooed on my finger, like tying a string there so I'd never forget to give thanks. Eucharisteo, Eucharisteo. Shortly after getting my tattoo, we found out that I was pregnant with Ezra. Eucharisteo did precede the miracle. And Ezra turned out just fine, even though you're not supposed to be pregnant when you get a tattoo. Whoops. These lists of Thanksgiving, mine, Anne's, or Israel's, fit into the context of what theologian Walter Brueggemann calls Psalms of Orientation. Brueggemann says, human life consists in turns of surprise, when we are overwhelmed with the new gifts of God, when joy breaks through the despair. Where there has only been darkness, there is light. Corresponding to this surprise of the gospel, we will consider Psalms of New Orientation, which speak boldly about a new gift from God, a fresh intrusion that makes all things new. These Psalms affirm a sovereign God who puts humankind in a new situation. So I wonder, what are the stories that you tell? How do you frame the moments of your day and the major events of your life, the good and the hard? It has been my experience that when I choose to find something, no matter how small, that enables me to give thanks in all circumstances, I am also enabled to properly reorient my life within the reality of God's goodness. Just like Anne, in listing my thanks, I found that, and this is one of her quotes, God is always good, and I am always loved. You'll notice in the bulletin, I've given you a version of Psalm 136 with all the particularities removed. Israel's story of escape from slavery and receiving the promised land is not our story. But as followers of Jesus, we certainly do have a story. And it has a table of thanksgiving at the center of it. I'm going to read you one last quote from Anne Voskamp's book, 1,000 Gifts. Eucharisteo. It's the central symbol of Christianity, thanksgiving. The table with its emblems is the essence of what it means to live the Christ life. Sunday after Sunday in our non-denominational Bible church, we're formally invited to take the bread and the wine. Doesn't the continual repetition of beginning our week at the table of the Eucharist clearly place the whole of our lives into the context of thanksgiving? And it's the most common of foods, bread. And the drink of the vine has been part of our meal-taking across centuries and cultures. Jesus didn't institute the Eucharist around some unusual, rare, once-a-year event, but around the continual act of eating a slice of bread, drinking a cup of fruit from the vine. 1 Corinthians 11:26 reads, "Whenever you eat this bread and drink this cup, whenever, like every day, whenever we eat, Eucharisteo, whenever, now, joy, wherever, here." Doesn't Christ, at his death meal, set the entirety of our everyday bread and drink lives into the framework of Eucharisteo? And so I'd urge you to take this psalm this week and consider what your own story is. I would hope that part of it is the story of this table of thanksgiving, this table of the gift of life we received to be in relationship with God and one another through the death and resurrection of Jesus. But beyond that, what would you highlight in your story? If you were to recount the movement of God's enduring love in your life, what would it say? What does your heart need to remember? What is the story you need to tell? What is your psalm that corresponds to this season of life and brings it to speech? As we remember, God's yesterday heart emerges and assures us of his heart for us today and reassures us that it will continue to beat for us tomorrow. What are the things you need to remember? Placing gratitude at the center of our story is powerful and transformative. As you move through this Thanksgiving weekend into your regular routines, I encourage you to cultivate thankfulness. May we take the invitation to set the entirety of our everyday bread and drink lives into the framework of Eucharisteo. And in so doing, may we taste and see that the Lord is good. May our lives of thanksgiving tell a story of God's love that endures forever. Amen.